Hey everybody, my name is Mike Gibb. I want to thank you for joining us today. I run at couchrecovery.net and I'm going to be moderating today's webinar on maximizing collector productivity. Collection agents are the lifeblood of a successful collection agency. That means they've got to be humming on all cylinders in order to keep an agency's productivity as high as possible. We're fortunate to have a panel of experts with us today to share their tips and strategies for maximizing collector productivity. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. You'll get the chance to hear about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope everyone will spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Irene Hoheisel has been in the collection industry for more than 22 years. She began as a collector and quickly became the head of the collection department, as well as all training, leadership, and compliance for ARSI. Irene has served on multiple ACA international committees, has been quoted and published in multiple articles in the Collector and Pulse magazine. She's an ACA certified instructor and a source for many due to her extensive knowledge in medical collections and the laws that govern. Irene has earned an alphabet soup of designations, certifications, awards, and recognition for her knowledge in the collection industry. She also serves as president of the Kansas Collectors Association, and Irene regularly presents educational seminars for ARSI clients, as well as ACA International, Chambers of Commerce, and many other associations. Greg Ruffino is the Director of Training at Williams & Fudge. Greg has worked at Williams & Fudge for the past 8 years, starting as a collector and working his way up the ladder to Director of Training. Greg spoke last year at ACA International's conference on the topic of training and just told me he's going to be speaking again at this year's conference next month in San Diego. He's also a certified training specialist with ACA International. Roger Weiss is the Chief Operating Officer of CACI and also runs the Collections Coach. Roger has been involved in the collections industry since 1992 and is a frequent speaker at events and conferences. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing and once the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available later today on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, I just wanted to take a second and ask everybody to fill out the survey, the feedback survey that should pop up on your screen after today's webinar is over. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Participating in the feedback survey helps me develop content that's what you're looking for and to find the speakers you want to hear from. With that, conclude the introductory remark portion of the webinar and we can launch into our discussion talking about maximizing collector productivity. So let's start right at the top. What metrics should an agency use to determine how productive a collector is? Irene, we'll let you take the first swing at this one.
Okay, well, there's a whole bunch of stuff really that we could use, but I mean, you want to look at everything, number of calls, number of contacts, compliance, if you have call analytics, payment arrangements, complaints, dollars collected, positive phone contact. But the thing is, everything needs to be looked at with everything else. No one thing is going to show productivity of a collector. They all kind of factor in, different variables need to be considered. Let's just say a collector is always on the phone and initiates a ton of calls. It isn't really a true measure of productivity. You also need to be looking at other things like how many inbound calls they're making, how many outbound calls they're actually making. And of those outbound calls, how many right party contact are they making? And of those contacts, how many of them are turning into payments? How many are turning into complaints? How many are turning into stalls? Then you got to factor in the tenure of the collector, the type of accounts you're collecting. It's really a difficult thing to use. I mean, having a ton of information and not using it is useless, but having a ton of information and using it incorrectly is worse than not having the information there at all. A lot of agencies, they can afford to have dedicated people that look into metrics. They see what is and isn't affecting productivity and, you know, where to make positive changes, where to fix problems. And, you know, but it's not just the individual collector or the procedure or the work instruction. All those things have to be put together with what you're finding. I know in our company, we have a ton of information. We just got on a couple of big clients, and I can tell you the truth, sitting here, we have been having a problem using the information that we have, like we did in the past. We were a little bit smaller. So coming up with, sometimes we just, I'm in the middle of training her now. We just hired a person who, that's going to be her sole job, is to be reviewing information, cascading that information that she's finding out down to supervisors and leads, and letting us know that we don't just have all this, but we're actually utilizing it.
I think that was pretty robust, Irene. This is Greg. And I'll agree with all of what you said, and the different kind of metrics that you could be looking at. It's almost endless. And I was trying to keep up with you and writing down some of the ones you mentioned. And one of the things I picked up on, and it's going to be dependent on the software programs you use, both collection and phone software, whether you have the capabilities or not. I know only 2 or 3 years ago, our office did not have some of these capabilities, and that is able to look at people's downtime or the time that they are in a not ready state, where they are deassigning themselves from perhaps the phone system, where they aren't ready to take an inbound call, and maybe they're lollygagging at their desk or browsing their phone or something, and they switch to a not ready state. I know a lot of our managers, in theory, they should be out in the rows, they should be monitoring these things, and employees tend to be most productive when they know that the supervisor is within eyeshot. Sometimes the supervisor is at the desk, and certain phone and collection software programs will give you the capability to have a dashboard. If the manager's having to do some work at their desk, they can see a number of their agents that are logged in, a number of their agents that are in a ready state. And we find that using some of those metrics, it's hard to get some of the production that Irene just mentioned if they're not even in a ready state or if they have a very high downtime. So those are some of the first things that we look at in our offices. What is your percentage of downtime versus ready time throughout the course of the day? And then there we kind of can take that information and correlate what you actually produced when you were in a ready state. So I just kind of wanted to add that in there as well as a metric that we find to be very important before we look at some of the conversion rates and right party contact rates.
Right, we call it dead time on our software system. If they're in, signed in, logged into the software, but besides phone calls, if they're logged into the software but not in an account, it shows us that time frame, the dead time. And our supervisors and leads, they pull those reports randomly and they look at them and they see, and they could tell very easily without actually pulling reports for the whole company, just for an individual collector, which ones we have problems with. But even then, I mean, those numbers aren't always just cut and dry, because what if I have a brand new collector? They're up a lot asking questions. They're taking a little bit longer to, after they hang up that call, to make sure they've documented everything and updated things and sent the proper confirmation letters or whatever they're doing next. So their dead time is going to be expected to be an awful lot higher than a collector I have here for years that I know they know what they're doing, and they're getting all that stuff done while they're on the phone. So they should have no dead time. They should be out of one account and straight into another. So there's a lot of variables, but you have to think of not just one. There is no one or two that's going to really show you true productivity. You have to look at the full of wax. I know Roger has things like that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You have to compare like to like. You can't compare the brand new employee to the 5-year tenured employee. So maybe have a comparison pool between your new hire types versus the tenure types. But you're right that that data only makes sense if you're comparing similar agents.
So I want to jump in on this for just a moment, because Greg, you and I, Irene, both bring up some excellent points and some excellent data points. A couple things that I would caution you about is don't get into analysis paralysis. And there are a lot of supervisors and managers, especially newer to their position, that can do just that. They want to measure 30 or 40 or 50 different data points and different key performance indicators. And what that can actually do is peel away from a collector's productivity. There's a rule of productivity that says if you focus on something, it will improve. However, if you focus on everything, you focus on nothing, and entropy will set in and you'll go through sprawl. A couple of the KPIs that I like to focus on that are just extremely simple is close rate. How many contacts are you getting to commit to pay? And with experience, that number should improve unless there's a different variable that changes. For example, product type, if you go from working medical to working third placement payday loans. That's obviously going to go down a little bit. And then average payment. An average payment, when combined with any other KPIs, I think is a great litmus as to what's going on, not only for an individual collector and for a company, but for a small group where you can do peer-to-peer comparisons. Even in the smallest agency, three or four or five collectors, everyone should have roughly a similar average payment. Otherwise, someone is doing something a whole lot differently. Historically, when I'll have someone that might be 20 or 25% lower than the preponderance of the other collectors, and we address it, oftentimes we pull that right back up, and oftentimes that collector even goes on to having a higher average payment. That's something that I know the three of us could talk about all day, and I'm sure, Mike, you want to go on to talk about a couple of other things.
I would like to stay here for a couple of minutes before we move on, because I think we've opened up a lot of, like, to Irene's word, a lot of different variables, a lot of different data points, and I like sort of talking about this concept of analysis paralysis, sort of sifting through all of these data points can get lost in the forest for the trees. So I'm curious, looking at all these data points that we've talked about so far, and I'm sure there are others that we haven't, but are there metrics that tend to get too much focus or attention and maybe aren't as important as some think they might be?
So I'll take the lead on that one there, Mike. So Roger kind of mentioned that there with the analysis paralysis, and just because you had a fancy report that was helping you and your staff in 2016, because at that time you discovered this report or this metric or this new piece of software and it was going good, and you get in the habit of running that report and splicing it up and providing that information, doesn't mean in 2019 you need to continue to do that, because I'm sure in the last 3 years you've only added more metrics to look at. And with the analysis paralysis, you actually need to analyze what you're analyzing. At some point in time during the year, you should have an exercise with the management staff, the training staff, to say, okay, what are all these data points we're pulling? Why are we pulling it? This is a report we've pulled since 2010. Is that still relevant today? Because too much information is overkill. And I think it's a great exercise for any management staff to have in some sort of periodic term, whether it's every quarter, semi-annually, whatever the case is, review the data that you're pulling and make a determination if it's still worth everyone's time to continue to pull that. And then I will also agree with what Roger said with comparing average payment rates. That's something that you can really hold people to across similar groups of teams or similar times of tenure. We definitely do that in our office. That's something that you can hold a standard to for everybody, especially when you're looking at similar balances work, similar kind of paper. We also kind of look at how many payment in fulls do you get versus payment arrangements. Because at the end of the day, you can't always chalk it up to that one consumer. It's across the board over a length of time. If you're well below the average of payment in full payments, it's probably because you're not asking for them enough versus the whole rest of the office. So average payment size is a great one, along with your payment in fulls versus your payment arrangements.
You know, Greg, it's funny you say that. We did a little project once, and we've done plenty of these things since, but I didn't have enough collectors I felt asking for payment in full. So I did a contest. I did a contest, basically it was for 2 weeks. Whoever got the most amount of payment in fulls in that 2 weeks got $150 extra bonus. And what I found was so interesting. At the end of the 2 weeks, I really didn't get as many payment in fulls, or increase as I thought I would, but the dollar amount of the payment plans that was set skyrocketed. It went from, it was like the average, I think, was $80 a month to $150 a month. And I think that was because when they were saying these things, they found the expectations, the consumer found the expectations of a payment plan was higher when they were asking for payment in full more often. So we learned from doing one exercise how we could improve on another. And I mean, so there's plenty of things that you could do to take the information that you have. If we didn't have reports to pull that stuff, we would have never noticed what happened, the byproduct of what happened. But like even when if you're looking at different metrics and you're finding, okay, well, isn't it great that they've made a lot of phone contacts? So yeah, that might look really great that they've been on the phone a lot. This collective is always on the phone. But are you really looking at everything? Because if that collector is always on the phone, it sounds great, but are you looking at the whole picture? Is he collecting anything that shows he's productive when he's on the phone? Or is he just touching a lot of accounts and that's it? Is the number of the accounts high? It could be a good thing, but if he's not collecting anything, if his percentage is not good of what he's actually, I have a lot of phone contacts, but I have very low collection rate, or worse, I have a lot of complaints or compliance issues that are coming up for this person, then it's not good that he's touching a lot of accounts or making a lot of phone calls. We need to slow that person down to do better on the phone and be more productive.
Very good. Well, I love that you had one objective that you're trying to solve, and inadvertently you were solving another one by default. That's pretty cool when you solve those problems and you didn't even mean to.
Right.
Excellent. Well, love to start we're off to so far, but what I'd like to do is just hit the pause button on the discussion briefly and invite Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning to say a few words as a sponsor of today's webinar. Chris?
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. We are grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, a web-based employee education and compliance training application to companies in the collection industry. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance. Their staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge expected of them when interacting with consumers. Knowledge Source automatically builds documentation of the compliance training efforts of the company for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. For those of you I don't know or haven't met, I've spent most of my career on your side of the desk. I've worked in the collection industry for more than 30 years, most of that time in an executive management of a collection firm. Knowledge Source was created to address many of the shortcomings in training and compliance I saw as a COO and CEO. Use Knowledge Source to implement an ongoing, continuous training cycle, reinforcing the knowledge you expect staff members to have before it begins to fade from memory. Present collection, client, or company policies to your staff members during onboarding training or at ongoing recurring schedules where they acknowledge they have read and understand those policies. Present tests during training events to validate learning and on recurring schedules to certify staff knowledge in areas you wish, such as the FDCPA or HIPAA. Use Knowledge Source during training events to present videos, slideshows, audio recordings, followed by a set of test questions to validate participation and learning. In summary, Knowledge Source will close knowledge gaps, promote accountability, lower your cost of training, document automatically for prospective and existing clients, regulators, and auditors of your company's proactive role in preventing compliance nonconformities. To find out more about us, visit peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris, and thanks again to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. We've got a question that came in from the audience, so I want to use this as a reminder to everybody. If you have a question for any of our panelists, please type it into your Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll do our best to get to it before the end of the discussion. The question that came in is, having the proper number of agents to work the agency's inventory is important to keeping productivity up. How do the panelists determine the collector to account ratios to ensure maximum productivity?
So, Mike, this is Roger. I'll jump in on that one because that's the $20,000 question, $20 million question, in my opinion. Oftentimes when we get RFPs or when we're talking to clients, we're asked, what's your collector to account ratio or your account to collector ratio? And that's such a loaded question because there are so many variables that go into that. If you can master that, boy, I think you've got a product for the agents here. The reason I say that is based upon the product type, the product level, and the product demographics that you're working, that is going to be all over the board. As an example, if you're working medical accounts, let's say some imaging accounts and what have you that have relatively low balances, there's absolutely no way you're going to be able to put $450 or 450 accounts or 1,000 accounts for that matter to one collector when the average balance might be $300, as opposed to if you're working $25,000 American Express Platinum or Black card, that you might be able to put a few more collectors to smaller inventories. So I don't know that there's a one size fits all. That's kind of a Rubik's Cube to me, because it's going to depend on every variable under the sun. I know I didn't answer the question with the exception of saying that I don't have a clear and concise answer. I will say that in our shop, we focus more on individual effort on higher scored, higher balance, higher valued accounts, where for both the client and the agency, we can extract more liquidation sooner than if we were treating all accounts equal across the board.
I agree with Roger. It's almost impossible to get a true number. Some things we've done in the past is we've tried to figure out an average of accounts collected work today across all variables, basically from new collector to oldest collector to accounts that have horrible information, accounts that our clients have given us awesome information, low balance, high balance, and we get that one very, very, very general number. And we use that number as kind of like a snapshot of how many people we need. But more what we're looking for is we ask those, like when Roger said you do an RFP, you know you're bringing a client on board. We not only ask them the obvious questions about what is the projected amount of accounts that you'll be sending and the projected amount of average balance, but we also meet with them and tell them, well, this is the information we need when you send us accounts. Will you be able to send us this address, last address, phone numbers, next of kin, whatever it is that we're asking for with the type of account? And we'll try to use that a little bit too in our numbers to see, well, these accounts, I'm going to have a lot of bulk and that's it. Because, I mean, it sounds really good when you have the cut and dry stuff, but you don't know what you're getting. If I have a client, which is why we go out and we teach our clients a lot of stuff, because sometimes they don't know either. But if I have a client that has been really good at gathering information, updating information, and they're going to send me accounts that are going to be a lot more collectible than a client who doesn't. Now, we do medical debt primarily, and the sad thing is with medical debt, especially now with 501R, where a lot of our hospital, charity hospitals are waiting longer to turn accounts to us because they don't want us to collect things in the ECA, in the time frame they're not allowed to collect with ECAs. We're getting a whole bunch of stuff later, and the sad thing is if a person moves, they'll usually tell their credit card company or their when they turn off the utility to move, they'll talk to utility companies and loans on their car. They'll do stuff like that. They'll contact those creditors and tell them the new address. But with a medical provider, very rarely do they do that unless they happen to go in for a new service to update an address in the file. So we have a lot of bad information and the accounts are much older. Anybody in the industry knows when the older an account is, the harder it is to collect. So you're spending a lot of time skip tracing on those accounts because you have obsolete information. So what type of client are you bringing on? So that also makes a difference with how many people we need. If we know we're going to have a lot more work in these accounts, I probably need more people because they can't get through as many as if I have this nice cut and dry. So again, like Roger said, I'm not giving you a formula or an answer, but suggestions on things to look at when you're trying to figure out what the number is.
And I'm going to add just a little bit to that in total agreement with both of you that it's something that you're tweaking all the time. But I can say in my office, in my experience in the last 4 years, we have both transformed the collection software platform to a completely new product, and also both our phone system. And I can also tell you that, I know we all have agencies of different sizes, but I can tell you that right now we are operating at our highest levels of revenue, our highest collector averages, our actual business placements is good, but relatively flat in the last 4 or 5 years. But we are collecting the highest amount of money that we've ever done in a company history with about 15% fewer staff than we did 4 or 5 years ago.
That's awesome.
And what that, and I will credit and all credit being due to some of the software programs that we've invested in and adapted to. The collection software that is faster, is better at handling transactions, the phone system that gets more calls to you, better connection rates and all that kind of good stuff will play a role into how many collectors you need. We're literally breaking records year over year with, 4 years ago, we were breaking a record with 290 collectors. We're doing it in 2019 with about 255 collectors. So it's not necessarily something that is stagnant all the time. If you're upgrading your technologies, as hopefully you are in every couple year increments or at least looking into that, you might be able to have some payroll savings and still be able to appease the client and still have a good ratio that's going to bring back the same dollar value.
I totally agree. We've stayed stagnant with the amount of collectors that we have. We usually average about 40 collectors in our company. We're not as big as you, but we actually collect three times as much as we did a few years ago with the same amount of collectors. We've integrated so much technology, so much automation into our yep. everyday life that it has made them faster. I mean, because there's only so many hours in a day and a human yep. being can do so much, but man, has it made a difference. I totally agree with you, Greg.
The automation factor is huge. So I'll go back to when I was working a desk 8-9 years ago, and there's a lot of things as the frontline collector. We're handling paperwork. I'm doing the scanning of things into the accounts. I'm doing a lot of manual processes of stuffing some envelopes and things of that nature. And, you know, fast forward even 4 or 5 years ago when we've kind of switched on the automation key or added one or two people on the back staff that's of a modest hourly rate to handle that stuff office-wide. And when I have collectors come in today and I'm training them, I'm always giving them the grandpa story. Like back in my day, 8 years ago, I had to do all this stuff. And these are all things that you don't have to do anymore, which just means more time for actual production. So automation is going to do nothing but become increasingly exponential, and the software slicker and faster. So all these things over the course of time, you're constantly monitoring and adjusting for. And hopefully you can outline that to your client. If you're speaking to a client who's, like Roger said, looking for a specific ratio, maybe they need to be explained that, hey, your ratios are from 5 years ago. Did you know since then we have automated X, Y, and Z, and we brought on this new investment software program, and it is allowing us to be a lot more streamlined. So those numbers, let's update those numbers and give you a better ratio so you're understanding what I'm telling you is going to get the job done.
And I could share a little baby step with you. If you're not technologically savvy or you don't have a lot of automation and you're not sure where to start, ask your collectors. Ask them for their wish list. So, okay, when you're working your accounts, what is it you wish you could do different? Like if you say you're sitting there, you stamp your foot down and you say, oh man, I wish this would work different. Or I wish I could just add this screen, or I wish I had. It's amazing when you ask them what their wish list is, you have a place to start to say, okay, well maybe we could automate this process and they don't have to do that anymore. And that's one way to get at least your foot started into the world of automation to get you a little bit more on task. And some of this stuff, your current vendors might already do. I mean, contact your vendors. Your vendors want you to be happy. And they don't know all the things you do. I mean, Mr. Rickman does because he has a lot of of experience collecting, but not all your vendors really know that. So if you're asking them and you're telling them this is what we need, and if everybody was doing that, and this vendor hears from all their other clients, this is what they need, they're going to develop what you need. So even if they don't have it now, you're eventually going to get it too. So it's in your own best interest. Best way to automate is ask your collectors.
Agree.
Let's move on. We actually got a couple more questions here from the audience I want to tackle. Should average handle time and calls per hour be a major indicator, I'm guessing, of productivity is the end of that question.
I'll just give a quick 2 cents and let the other panelists jump in. I would say it all comes down to conversion rate. If it takes you 30 minutes of a conversation to secure a $10,000 payment, I can't complain and I can't be upset with you. But if it takes you 30 minutes to not have any conversion, then that call should have ended after 5 or 7 minutes. So I'll just leave that out there. It all depends on conversion rates and average payments within how long the phone call is.
So I will kind of jump on Greg's bandwagon there, and I will say it's something that needs to be watched and looked at. However, I look at it from a little bit different of a perspective. I look at it from collectors wasting a lot of time on the wrong calls. One of the most difficult things to get in debt collections is we're not there to collect the accounts that will pay based off of a letter, and we're not there to collect the accounts that will never pay. Collectors exist solely for the purpose of talking to the consumers that can be convinced to pay the debt. So identification of the ones that have no ability or willingness to pay, and then getting off the phone from those, is an art and a science in and of itself. Often, far too often, like Greg alluded to, we find people who are spending time 5, 7, 9 minutes on a call that goes absolutely nowhere. And really, the average, and I believe this still holds true, the average collection call should be about 3 minutes. If you get the yes, yes, yes call, you can walk through taking a payment over the phone in 3.5 to 4 minutes. And then how many times are you going to get the conversation where they can't pay you and they hang up on you and do you a favor by hanging up on you, by the way, because they're not going to pay anyway and you move on after 30 seconds. So I would say watch that on an individual basis. If you've got, whereas the group has a 4.5 minute average call time, but you've got an outlier with an 11.5 minute average talk time or call time, you might want to address that person. However, if everyone is within the same range, I would say that that would not be the top of my list to focus on.
So I'll just add a real life thing that happened in our office this week based on the person that asked that question. We kind of gave you, well, it doesn't really matter, or there's a lot of tangibles, but what you were asking, we actually were able to utilize. We had to part ways with an employee this week, unfortunately, because in some analytics, and she's part of a very small team, 5 or 6 collectors that do the exact same thing at the exact same time every day, same schedule. And we ran some reports and we saw what you just asked about average talk time. Well, it came out that her average talk time was ridiculous in comparison to her constituents, where she was literally at, like, I'm talking 30 seconds, 15 seconds, 45 seconds. So you dig a little bit deeper, and the rest of her teammates, kind of like Roger said, in the 3 to 7 minute range. And why are you in this 15, 30 second range? And it's not because consumers are hanging up on her because she doesn't want to talk to them. It's because she didn't want to talk to people when she was hanging up on them. So that was a piece of analytics that we were able to, and maybe took us longer than it should have to realize it, but I'm glad we found it. And unfortunately, this person just didn't want to do the job anymore, and they were collecting a paycheck and hanging up on people until we were able to discover it based on that specific analytic of average call time. And you know what? Sorry, you got to go.
Yeah, that's actually funny.
Yeah. And she knows we run reports, you know? It's not like it was a surprise.
Right.
Another question from the audience. As a rule of thumb, what percentage of fees collected should collectors collect to hit your overall goal for your monthly fees? For example, let's say your monthly goal is $200,000 in fees and you have 10 or fewer collectors. How much do you expect your collectors to bring in to reach that $200,000 goal? And what do you expect your house queues to bring in?
Well, that's a tough question.
It's a good one,
like we ask here, Irene.
Yeah, I think that one's hard because, again, it depends on your clients. It depends on like what we've just been talking about, how much time you expect your collector to spend in these certain accounts. I mean, and if you have, like, we have thousands, few thousand clients, but really only maybe 100 of those clients are our top generators, dollar generators. But every single one of them has a different expectation of what they expect us to do in the account, how many letters they expect to go out, how many calls they expect to be made, the type of dollar payment plans they're willing to accept, if they accept settlement in full. I mean, it's really hard to you know, and we also have collectors that collect different types of accounts that are just scheduled to collect those accounts that we are not allowed to file legal action on, for instance, we don't credit report on. And then other collectors collect accounts that can have legal action, that we can have pull credit reports and reports with credit bureaus. But I expect totally different things from them. They have totally different dollar amounts that they're set for. And then the tenure of the collector makes a difference. I mean, my seasoned collectors, they're we have goals set. They're blowing those goals away every month, and we have to give them, you know, for incentive, instead of raising their goal where they would be penalized if they didn't make it compared to someone with a lower goal, we give them goal bonuses if they reach certain points over their goal. But for a newer collector, I can never expect them to reach those goals. So that's a really hard one. I think you have to look more internally to see what your averages are now. Like, look at those top performers, the ones that don't have a lot of complaints, the ones that, the low maintenance ones that seem to be bringing in pretty good money, that you're pretty satisfied with the amount of calls they make. You're satisfied with their right party contact. You feel their payment plans are being kept, that kind of stuff. You know, you really think they're doing a good job. Look at those and get an average from them, and then make your senior staff have to meet that average. Then pull your new people in and do the same thing and see what's average, and then raise those as they get more tenure. That would be the best way, I would say. But I don't think there's any one way to say, well, if you expect 200,000, expect your collectors to bring in this. You don't know how many collectors you need because you don't know what they're capable of bringing in unless you use metrics to figure it out.
Yeah, I wouldn't judge anybody. Yeah, I'm sorry, Roger, but I'll be quick here. I wouldn't judge any single month. I think we all know that month to month there could certainly be a lot of fluctuation between people's totals and their numbers. But over the course of several months, you should never have the same 20% of your staff creating 80% of the revenue and 80% of your staff generating 20% of the revenue. That's going to be a major problem that you have with the 80% of your staff that you're paying a lot of overhead to. So I would just look at some length of time, whether it's 3 months, whether it's the course of a quarter. Any collector can have a bad month in a quarter, but come back and have two strong months. But when I see the same individual producing below standard or not their share of the pie, so to speak, then yeah, then you're going to want to look at that person and retrain them or tool them up or make a better decision for their career. But any given 1 month, it's hard to say, hey, you didn't provide your share of the pie this month. Over the course of several months, maybe, but you definitely want to make sure that there is some sort of level ground to some degree. You're always going to have your top collectors, your middle, and your bottoms, but is it the same people at the bottom? Same people at the bottom middle, those are the ones I'd focus on a consistent time frame.
And I love the way you said that, make a better career choice for them.
So as Greg gave you a real world scenario just a few minutes ago, I am going to give you my real world scenario that I just went through approximately 48 minutes ago. That is one of the metrics that we really focus on, and I do have a very simple answer for you, and that answer is more. So one of the big metrics that we track here is immediate payment dollars, and that is defined as credit cards and checks over the phone with the occasional splashing of like a MoneyGram in each day by collector and then by rolled up as the group. And what I do is I take the total number of production hours. So let's say that we've got X number of collectors that are full-time. So there's 8 production hours there. And then Y number of part-timers that work 4 hours a day. So there's that additional number of production hours. And I divide it by the total immediate payment dollars that we achieve. And we track that on a daily basis. And we break it down by hour. So not only can you get it by collector, but you can get it by day, by group, and you can have everyone focus on it. And ours right now is $250 per production hour per person. Why? Well, because it's more than where we are. We are at about $222 or $227, I believe, per production hour right now. And I want that lifted to $250 per hour. And the reason I want that lifted is incrementally by the total number of production hours per day multiplied by 21, which is the average number of days in each month, you will get an astronomical lift. And again, I go back to my primary point that when you focus on something, it improves. And we consistently focus on that and put that number out there. I'm going to encourage you guys to go to Walmart or Walgreens, either one. Heck, you could go to CVS and invest in a stack of index cards and some Sharpie markers and give each collector what their hourly goal is. And they will focus on that and they will start hitting that. And when they do, rip that card up and give them a brand new one with a higher number on it, and you will see those numbers improve. So I know that's not an extremely specific answer or formula, but that's what we do in my office, and we've had great success in showing improvement in that area.
Cool. Are there rewards for hit, you know, for every time they get a new card with a new amount? Is that like, is there other incentives for that beyond what their normal, you know, commission might be?
Boy, I tell you what, Mike Gibb, you keep that up and I'm going to bring you in as an ops manager. Actually, right now there's not a reward for that other than increased bonus, increased commissions, possibly winning the contest and the ever coveted job security. I do like that. Maybe I do need to look at an individual contest like that. You're a pretty smart fella.
I like that you said that, Roger, because we have to often remind ourselves here to, yes, incentives are always great. You always have to have that at the front, the forefront, but don't get your employees' expectations or don't over spoil them. I mean, these things obviously have a company cost. Like you already said, a lot of the times the incentive is look at your paycheck, buddy. Look at your 401k now. Look at all of these things that are improving based on that productivity. Yeah, you're always going to want to time your incentive programs or incentive directives. I would just caution and recommend that you're not doing something every single month or every single week. It's exhausting for the managers to constantly monitor and come up with these things, and it can be very costly to the company. But no, there's a time and a place for it, and you got to have a good temperature gauge on your staff and the individuals and the overall company culture and budgets as to when and how you deploy certain incentives that might have. I mean, there's lots of incentives that have no dollar value, like parking spaces and things of that nature. But when you're getting into tapping into the budgets and whatnot, it's all about timing it throughout the year so things don't lose their luster if you're doing something every week or every month that has some sort of dollar value to it. But yeah, hey, look at your bigger paycheck. How's that for incentive?
I'll tell you, Greg, we actually do games and contests every week. Every Friday we do games and contests, but very rarely is that game or contest a reward that's monetary. That is reserved for certain times in the quarter. But we do fun games, things that make them laugh and smile and have fun. The reward for it is maybe embarrassing me. They get to come up here and embarrass me. But I have to sit and pop a balloon, you know, with my butt, or I have to dance a Michael Jackson dance, or they write a poem that I have to read in front of everybody that to the rhythm of Mary Had a Little Lamb, or they do things like that. And I find those incentives sometimes actually motivate them throughout the day even more, because you could see they'll run back to their desk and they're trying to get that next thing that they can come and give me another thing to do or give my staff. I've sang like Diana Ross with my supervisors behind me as my, you know, the Supremes. It's been great. We have fun. It keeps the floor upbeat, but there's no dollar amount in that. I find more people participate in those than they do in the ones that give them time off or dollar amounts, even though we do those also. So I don't know if it's so much don't do it all the time, but I definitely agree with your point. Look at that bottom line budget, and because they do start to expect it, which we used to. We used to do it all the time where every week it was some type of reward. And we realized that if we missed a week or if the reward wasn't good enough, we started getting people complaining. I'm like, what are you complaining about? So we backed it off and we started incorporating some of these fun things. It's worked wonders.
I agree. And you kind of instantly kind of tweaked my pre-talking point there. And you're absolutely right about the fun stuff. We've definitely like had incentives for ice bucket challenge, dumping it on the president and like pies to the face and all that kind of stuff. You're absolutely right. And if you're able to be that creative and that consistent with it, then I'll just say nothing but hats off to you. Lucky for your staff and keep doing it because they obviously love it.
I have an assistant. She's in charge.
There you go. Someone's got to do the heavy lifting.
Excellent. Well, I'm curious. I want to we've talked about all the different data points that go into determining productivity. And in a lot of cases, it seems like it's very specific to each different collector, depending on their experience level or the type of debt they're working or the type of balances that they're working. So I'm curious, you know, how do you sort of manage all of these different formulas? I mean, is it just, you know, do you have a spreadsheet and everything sort of gets plugged in and, you know, a productivity score gets outputted? I mean, how do you actually sort of manage these different formulas for all, you know, taking into account all the different variables that have to go into it.
I'd like to hear from you on this one, Roger. I'm calling you out. Sorry.
Well, that's, I don't know that they get much broader than that.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Greg. I owe you one, Greg, buddy.
Thank you, bud.
Pal of mine. So I think that I don't even know that I've got a holistic answer to form on that. Thanks for calling me out, Greg, because that's one that I wanted to soak on for a minute. Just to
So did I, Roger. That's why I needed you to start talking.
Roger, if you want to let Irene had a little lamb.
Oh, gee, thanks.
Let Irene talk while I'm putting a couple of notes together here.
Okay, well, we all know Irene can talk, so on anything. But the fact is, this is a tough one. I don't think there is any good way to do this. I think it's individually within your own organization to know what's the most important metrics and things to follow. But, I mean, a lot of the stuff that we do with the Automate, we get emails sent to the key people automatically. So once a month, or if it's something we monitor weekly and things like that. But like I said before, we've had the problem where when we're busy, we have all this wonderful information, but it doesn't always get looked at and assessed and trickled down to where it's got to go. So in our situation, my answer is I hired somebody. So I have a person who's supposed to be really good at this stuff, who is going to be working for us, who's not out of training yet, who hopefully the goal is that she will get these emails and these automatic reports, and she will go into our different vendor softwares and pull the reports that we want, and she'll figure out how to assess the information and trickle it down to all the supervisors and leads that need it. That's the best answer I can give.
I'll agree that in the last year and a half, I believe, we have brought on a specific data analysis individual. He does have a lot of collection experience and background, but that's what his key focus is now. There's some other tasks that we assigned to him, but that's what he's doing. He is constantly tweaking how a score can be derived for an individual. It's something that I always want to say is a learning step in progress, because no matter how good you think it's going to get, you're going to hear from a collector that's going to give you a very good reason or valid reason why X, Y, and Z was not as good this week as last week. And when you're looking at raw data and not the personal situations that people have, or the different training sessions they're off the floor for, or company meetings, or a sick kid, and you have someone just pulling raw data, they might not know that, and they're providing that raw data to the manager or the supervisor. Some of those things get kind of skewed. So that's why it's difficult for all three to answer this, because I wish I could tell you that we're at a perfect spot where we derive 8 points of data and it comes up with the perfect score analysis that we can compare apples to apples to, but you have to be careful in the analysis and how you derive these scores, because there's a lot of unknown factors sometimes that go into those.
I gave birth to two statisticians, and their biggest phrase is garbage in, garbage out. So if you don't have good information going in, you're not going to have a good outcome.
Yep.
So the other thing that I would add to all of that is, especially if you're in a smaller or mid-sized agency, don't get bent on formalization of reports. You can use that raw data as talking points to initiate conversations with and point out some discussion topics that you guys can talk about. I think that you will find it amazing when you bring something up, anything up, that it will become a priority to everyone within earshot, and they will provide you feedback via data that you'll be able to pull and see, as well as their qualitative measurements back to you. We heard the garbage in, garbage out statement. Well, I can't tell you how often I have to point out, guys, all of these accounts are in collections for a reason. If they all paid, they wouldn't be in collections. So be thankful that some of these people won't pay, because we get the clients occasionally, man, this is just tough business. You can't collect anything on it, right? Well, you can, and people do every day. We do every day. So I would say, in addition to using your system and automating the reports, we use one of the things that we do internally, and this is a little bit out of the box, but we're on Latitude, and we use Client Access Web, but we also go in and we build reports not only out of Account Analysis and Latitude, but we'll build them in, or different reports in Client Access Web that we're able to go back and refresh and pull also, and get just a different perspective of data. And they're both very easy tools to work with. I would be willing to bet that in your software and through your vendors, they have methods of data provision that you might not be seeing or thinking about. And by the way, when I say that, I'm actually considering and thinking of more of the smaller and mid-sized companies than I am the large companies. Let's face it, if you've got 7 to 10 collectors sitting there, you probably don't have a data analyst sitting there with you. However, that might be the most valuable person you need in there, that's telling you on a constant, chronic, and ongoing basis what accounts to work, what accounts not to work, and what key KPIs are imperative to look at and what you might need to let slide for a while.
Yeah, and I agree to be cautionary. Like, it's great to have automated reports because it's easy to do that these days. And if that report goes out to your collection staff, I know personally in this office that we might generate some automated reports because people ask for it. So, okay, you want to provide them what they're asking for. But oftentimes the collectors that want to see that data aren't really necessarily the ones that need it, because they're going to be working hard no matter what. A lot of times the automated reports, the people you really want to see are the ones on the bottom of those reports and probably not even reading those reports. So if you're working with individuals or desiring people to actually use the information in that report, like a collector gets an email, automated report, and you need this individual to kind of up their game, I would explain to them, hey, we send this report out. This is what you should be looking for on the report. This is what it means and how you can profit off of this. And this is how you disseminate the information. If that report goes out, I might challenge that collector. In 2 hours after the report gets emailed, I might call them over, go see them and say, hey, tell me about the numbers you saw in that report. And you're going to know right away if they ever looked at that report or not. So if it's being automated, that's great. It's a time saver. But if the information's not being utilized, then it's nothing but a waste of time. And you got to kind of hold them accountable.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in not overwhelming collectors with many reports. They should have it after. If they're going to get a report individually, I feel it should be after their supervisor or their lead has looked at it and made comments on it. This way, they're quickly checking out those comments and getting back to work. We felt that worked better than them sitting there looking through these things and trying to figure out what it actually meant and wasting time when they should be collecting. So you need to know what you really want to share, what reports you want to share, and what you're doing with that report. But don't get yourself, well, now I'm automated, let me just send stuff out, because you don't want to slow down your collectors either. So you have to have a pretty good balance with that.
Yep.
We've only got a couple of minutes left before we wrap up, but I'm curious, with regards to, you know, whatever metrics you're using or an agency is using to gauge how effective the collectors are being, do you post those scores? Do you publish those scores? Do you let the collector sort of see how they're comparing against everybody else as a motivational tool, or is that something that is that you shouldn't do?
I'll take this one because I wanted to add in something I thought would be, at least in my mind, good to add that we haven't covered yet. So I'm a proponent, Mike, that the answer to that is yes, because we're adults and we're not in elementary school where everybody wins, right? And I can assume that practically every agency out there is in a highly competitive environment. And in the business world, there's no time for sore losers. So if you don't like to see your name at the bottom, figure out why it's there and what you can do to improve that. And the one thing I wanted to add to that is just a piece of opinion or advice I would say is, at least here in my office, we get a lot of good successful collectors that had never had experience prior. They're coming from other industries, other backgrounds, service, hospitality, food and beverage industries that tend to really work out well for us. Well, what we don't do is put in our promotional marketing recruiting material all this stuff about how we run metrics and analysis and how we're going to look at all the buttons you push and the frequency of it. because I believe that would scare a lot of people off or lead to a lot of hesitancy or a lot of big brother type thoughts. But what we do make adamantly sure of is during the interview process, before we ever exchange any offers being made, once we get a warm and fuzzy on that person, we're going to outline very clearly that this is what the job is like. We do run these analysis. We do provide these statistics and metrics. We're going to measure this and that. We like to post our results publicly. And there's a reason behind that. And then, of course, explain this is exactly why we do it. And then in that interview process, you might come across people where that is an absolute non-negotiable and that is something that they don't want to be a part of. And I can understand that. Or you're going to get the person that understands that they're walking into an environment that is competitive, that numbers do get posted, that their productivity will be monitored, because a lot of jobs out there, let's face it, that's just not happening. And that might not be the best fit for you. So I'm not going to say to promote how you run these awesome analyses to bring the people in, but before you sign on the dotted line to get them employed, I'd make sure that they fully understand what it is you guys are doing to help them build success and to keep your business operating successfully.
I think that if you have a person, and you sure do, and you have those star collectors that really wants to be the star collector, and it incentivizes them when they see, well, that one's on top. I want to be Mary one day. And they're going to watch themselves and they're going to push themselves harder to want to be that top person. And like Greg was saying, if you have the ones that are just going to get embarrassed by it all the time and they don't want to pull the weight to move it up, because let's face it, everything we do, it's not rocket science. Anybody could do what we do. You just got to have the desire to do it and try to do well and show up for work each day and follow the rules. I mean, every job out there that you have, even outside collection, you have expectations. And if you want to self-improve and you have goals, I believe in baby steps, and you have goals and baby goals, I think it gives them, because they can not only see that they're not the only ones, but they could watch from month to month, from week to week, from day to day, and see how others, maybe hired in their same class, are excelling. And I think it does push them. And I'm okay with pushing out the ones that aren't cutting it. I'm okay with that. Because if they're not going to cut it, I want to fill their seat with somebody else that might cut it.
I don't have a lot to add to either of that. I echo every ounce of it. We are in a production-based industry. We are not in an efforts-based industry. So I feel like I'm doing better and I'm trying. If it doesn't equate to the bottom line, there is some, it's either a will issue or a skill issue. And whereas they might be trying while they are there, if they're missing too much time, if they're late, if they're telling their neighbor about every call that they just had, that's it. They're trying to waste and steal time from you. So I'm a big advocate of sharing all of that data from bottom to top and using, again, especially for that bottom 20% of performers, that whole report as a reason to have a conversation. People have to come up or they have to go out, one of the two directions.
Right.
Yeah. And when you don't publicize this information, people will kind of formulate conspiracy theories and they're going to question, well, I wonder how many accounts, what's their name got placed with last month, or they're going to come up with all kinds of crazy stuff. So even though some people in the office might not like it, if you need to sell them and spin the positive as to why, it's to say, if nothing else, this is to help provide for an environment where there are no questions, where nothing's secretive, everything's out in the open, there should be no issues, no one's getting scammed here, no one's getting the short end of the stick, all our information is public, in addition to all the other reasons why. But sometimes I get people that are embarrassed or don't like it, but then I kind of sell them and spin them and say, hey, imagine a world in this office where nothing was published and you had no idea what was going on and you're wondering why this person is making so much money and you're not. Well, let me show you why. Check out this production report. Look at what they're doing compared to what you're doing. You want to make what they're making? Well, in part, you can get your production numbers to look somewhat like theirs. So public information is going to kill or eliminate jealousy or uncertainty or those kind of crazy office conspiracies.
Or the comments where your expectation is just too high. Nobody's expecting me to do. When they see, well, a lot of nobodies are doing it. So no, my expectations are not too high, because if they could do it, so could you.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, we're past the top of the hour, so unfortunately we've run out of time. But before I let everyone go, I want to thank Irene, Greg, and Roger for their valuable insights and taking the time to share them with us today. This webinar clearly would not have been possible without their participation. So Irene, Greg, Roger, thank you very much on behalf of all of us today. I also wanted to thank Peak Revenue Learning one more time and Chris Rickman for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.peakrevenuelearning.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions and listened today. One final reminder to please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey for today's webinar to help identify topics and speakers that will be of the best use to you. A recording of this event will be posted to accountsrecovery.net later today. And I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy your day. Have a great weekend. Take care.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.